At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
A warm and friendly hello. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Pierce, and now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. We've got a tremendous podcast for you guys. We're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Jim Root, over at the Three Man Weave. Does a great job taking a look at the great game of college basketball, and we're going to be asking him about something that I'm sure many of you guys have been asking. Where has all this variance come from in a college basketball this season, and how do we combat it? We're going to talk a little bit about live betting on that front. We're also going to talk about just how there's been a lot of, shall we say, mysterious teams this season, teams that we haven't necessarily been able to get a beat on, and why that might be. And then we're going to dive into the two Big East games that we're going to be seeing for Friday. And then in the final segment, I'm going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, whatever, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters DM, naming does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Not a ton to recap from Thursday, but we do have a few of those games. And then the late West Coast games from Wednesday to take a look at and sub-updated betting trends. So let's take a look back at those, try to find those trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
New Mexico State was able to get a push on a lot of closing numbers against St. Mary's. If you got in early, you were able to get there with New Mexico State. 81-68 was the final in this one as St. Mary's just continues to look really, really good as Mitchell Saxon down low, 10 points, 11 rebounds. Kyle Bowen, 16 points, 8 boards as he went 4 of 6 from 3-point range. St. Mary's, 13 of 31 from distance. And for New Mexico State, a little bit of a power outage. They go 4 of 12 from distance. They were really held down in this game as DeShwandre Washington was able to contribute 20 points. But really past that, you didn't have a lot going on. I was doing this podcast yesterday as the first half had just wrapped up in Western Kentucky and Louisville. And, well, Louisville, of course, I fade them with the DK Nation pick. And they went 13 of 25 from 3-point range, 94-83. This is one of those outliers I'm talking about, guys. Louisville was shooting about 28% from 3-point range. They also went 19 of 20 at the free throw line. LLS, 30 points, 10 assists for Western Kentucky. Not a great look, but I mean, they did go 9 of 26 from 3-point range. They were able to get 25 points out of Davion McKnight, Jarius Hamilton, a double-double. So just very, very strange, to say the least, on that one. You did see Nevada get a win, but no cover against UC San Diego as well, 64-56. Been noticing that Nevada has really been going a little bit more slowly. Three-point shooting is a little bit intermittent with them. They went 5 of 21 from distance, but they did a solid job being able to win the rebound battle, 39-32, as you only had 2 points, but 10 rebounds out of Darion Williams. And guy that you do want to take note of for UC San Diego, Bryce Pope, 14 points. He's been the main scorer for the team. He went 5 of 10 from 3. UC Riverside, they got a cover against Oregon, 71-65, as Oregon was up 17 points in this game, but Oregon wins this game despite taking 20 fewer field goal attempts than Riverside. They also won the free throw battle, 19 of 26 for Oregon to 7 of 10 for UC Riverside, but Riverside also did force Oregon into 16 turnovers as Zion Pullen was pulling in there at 21 points, so he did a solid job. And then USC, they get a win but no cover over Long Beach State by kind of 88-78. Abdu Terrier was able to have a 16-16 performance for Long Beach State. 16 points, 16 rebounds to the Beach. They go 4 of 11 from three-point range, and USC, they are up going 11 of 25 from three-point range themselves. And then for Thursday, we're not going to be able to give you too much in terms of those two West Coast games, but Chattanooga, they were able to pull off a nice underdog win against Middle Tennessee, 82-73 the final, as this was just a sizzler of a performance from deep for Chattanooga. They go 10 of 19 from three-point range. They win this game despite taking 16 fewer field goal attempts because they also went 20 of 27 at the free throw line. Jake Stevens, 24 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks, and then for Middle Tennessee, you did have Eli Lawrence chip in there, 21 points, but that said, this is also a Middle Tennessee bunch that lost the rebound battle 37-21. That'll hurt you. We did see Presbyterian get by Elon by kind of 69-63. If you, like me, had Elon, can't help but feel very, very salty about this one, as Elon was up 51-38 with about, I would say, 11 and a half minutes remaining. Game goes over a lot of closing numbers by about 1 point because of late game fouling. So that was not an ideal start to the day for myself, as Owen McCormick, who had been really bad from three-point range entering into this game, shooting sub 30%. He goes 4 of 6 from long range, 21 points, 7 rebounds, and for Elon, this has been one of the center teams in all of college basketball. Zach Irvin, they were able to chip in their 11 with him, and for Elon, they actually did play even up in terms of the turnover battle. They lost the rebound battle 39-30, but all in all, not the world's worst showing from them. They just couldn't execute late. That's what it came down to, and we very nearly saw what I would claim to be one of the worst beats ever. If you did have Wisconsin, probably feeling a little bit salty about the end, but I don't think Wisconsin should have covered this game, and they did not. 78-56, the final. Lehigh was up 5 points with 14 minutes remaining as a 23-point underdog, and it very nearly melted away because Wisconsin was just scorching hot from three-point range. They went 11-21 overall from distance off the bench. Connor Asagan, he goes 3 of 7 from three-point range, 13 points, 6 rebounds. Stephen Kroll and Tyler Wall down low, they combine for 28 points, 8 assists, 12 rebounds, and for Lehigh, they go 4 of 14 from three-point range. Keith Higgins Jr., 7 of 11 from the floor. He's always open to giving you 15 points. Evan Taylor chipped in there 18, and for Lehigh, the most significant play of the game came with about 30 seconds remaining, where they were able to get a made three by Jake Betlow. So a big thanks to him, or else this would have been one of the biggest beats that we have seen in quite some time. Lehigh able to get there on that one. I'm doing this as the Colorado-North Alabama game is going on right now. Colorado up by kind of 38-24. Northern Alabama team, it's not been too terrific. Meanwhile, for Colorado, they've had Tristan Da Silva have 11 points in the first 17 minutes of this game, so he's been looking relatively solid. And Nichols, a team that does a great job of being able to generate turnovers, currently they're all over Southeast Louisiana. Southeast Louisiana turned it over 10 times in that first half, and Nichols went 7 of 11 from three-point range. So they have really been able to get hot with that regard, and if you're taking a look at what has been hot in college basketball this season, it has been all about home underdogs. If you take a look at the last 7 A's, not as hot, but still solid, just fewer opportunities. 31-28 and 1 against the spread are home underdogs over the last 7 A's, and over the last 7 A's, a big uptick to the overs. 121 overs, 102 unders, so 54.3% of games over the last 7 A's have gone over. If you take a look overall for the season, still have seen quite a few unders. 50.7% of games going under, 854 unders to 829 overs, and home underdogs, which I was referencing before, hitting overall for the season at 55%, 229, 187, and 7 underdogs overall, hitting at 51.4% at 859, 813, and 27 as well. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we got on Wednesday/Thursday. Now coming up next, we're going to be joined by our good friend Jim Rudy. He does amazing work over there at the three-man weave. Going to be talking with him about some of the funky results we've seen to start the season, trying to figure out some of these mystery teams, and taking a look at the Big East matchups that we've got for Friday next here on Kuzco's Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
Vegas, but just because with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is great to be joined by our guest as Jim Roof does absolutely tremendous work over at the Field of 68, and he is a contributor as well for the Three Man Weave and Action Network to be able to follow all that he, Matt Cox, and Kai McKeon do over at the Three Man Weave. That's at the number 3MW underscore CBB. And the reason why I mentioned Field of 68 first is that I believe that our good friend Jim had a side bet with a few folks. I think it was Jeff Goodman, and currently he has to have a Kansas photo as right now his banner in terms of Twitter, which is absolutely hilarious. All the Three Man Weave guys say we're on the wrong end of that one. But with that said, Jim does an absolutely terrific job taking a look at the great game of basketball, and you're able to follow Jim on Twitter at the number 2 and D Chance Points, so that's Second Chance Points with a number 2 on there, and always appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, the Twitter avatar bet was a tough loss. Never back your alma mater when your alma mater stinks. That's the problem. I don't know why I thought Mizzou could compete with Kansas. They didn't. They got slaughtered, and now I'm stuck with Mitch Lightfoot as my picture for 3 weeks. Stinks.
Mitch Lightfoot, who might be the most ancient player I've ever seen in college basketball. I mean, that dynamic duo of he and Jalen Coleman Lance. I think that those guys were in college for so long that they're able to offer their own law service, and it could be Lightfoot and Coleman Lance and Company. And it sounds like there's three names where there's really two. So that would be absolutely tremendous. They could come out to lovely Las Vegas. They'd be able to do some great business out here. But with that said, I mean, you mentioned it with Missouri. They've honestly been a team that has been a fascination with me. They're not going to be in action on Friday, but they are going to be on Saturday. And these are some of the teams that are most difficult to handicap, a team like a Missouri. Because with Missouri, they're a top five team if you look at raw points scored on a per possession basis. Problem is, they're not guarding a soul, and this team is so vastly different from last year because with Dennis Gates, he's really played up tempo, and he was starting to push tempo a little bit at Cleveland State last year, but it was never anything even close to this. What do you make out of a team like Missouri, which they're going, let's call it what it is, a bit against what we saw from Dennis Gates while he was at Cleveland State, and they just completely went in a completely different direction from past seasons?
Yeah, he's really hit the gas pedal. I didn't anticipate this. He's always played a lot of guys. He's gone deep into his bench, but it hasn't been like because they were running. This year, he's still playing a ton of bench minutes. despite ignoring Isaiah Mosley. That's neither here nor there.
That's crazy, yeah, by the way.
I know. There's got to be something we don't know behind the scenes. I hope. The offense has been great, but they're also tough to figure out because they haven't really played anybody. I'm completely aware of that as a Mizzou fan. I know they've only played two teams inside the top 100 at KenPom. They got blown out by one of them, Kansas. And they've got quite a stretch coming up here now with UCF and Illinois, and then SEC play starts with Kentucky and at Arkansas. So we will know a lot more about Missouri by the time it's January 4th and the new year has just started. But right now, it's a little bit of a mystery. I think the offense is legit, but they don't have much size. I think the defense is going to continue to look bad like it did against Kansas. So that worries me. We'll see if they have to slow down a little bit in league play when opponents just take advantage of the open floor that Missouri style presents.
And Missouri, I think, is a prime example of something that we are seeing here in the 2022-23 season. It feels like there's more mysteries at this time of year than normal, because typically when you've got teams that have 8-10 games under their belt, it's been a little bit over a month, you're finally able to decipher, okay, this team is starting to be a little bit for real. Maybe they had a lucky game or two, and now I'm able to decide, all right, this is exactly what they are. But I feel like there are more teams this year than ever before, in which it's a little bit of a jury's out case, because we've seen like incredible inconsistency from a team that was on display on Thursday in Colorado. Tennessee is still a team that I love their defense. I don't know quite what they're going to be on offense. Maryland was looking really good, and then they get completely destroyed by UCLA. We're able to go down the list. It just feels like there's more teams now than ever before that I still need to see a little bit more from them before I'm able to decipher, all right, this is what Team X or Team Y is.
Yeah, can we sit and grab the low-hanging fruit here and blame it on the portal? I think that might be a little bit a part of it, because there is so much roster turnover. It's not like teams are bringing back everybody but their graduates. A lot of teams change over 8 of their 10 rotation players, sometimes even more. So you have to wait and see a little bit. And really, these teams are figuring it out too. Like, as much as we as gamblers don't know what these teams are, I think a lot of them don't know what they are either. Even somebody like Gonzaga, they lost Chet Holmgren and Andrew Nembhard to the NBA. They brought back almost everything else, but they still don't really have everything figured out. Their backcourt rotation is a little bit dicey at times. They're trying to figure out if Efton Reed or Ben Gregg is the right backup center. They've got all kinds of things to work out, and that's a team that right now ranks 22nd nationally in minutes continuity. Even they're still trying to figure it out. It has been a difficult season early on with all of the turnover and all of the changes with rosters. So if you have a good read on a team, you gotta run with it, because there are few and far between teams that actually are consistent enough to feel totally locked in on, let's say.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is certainly interesting to take a look this time of year, and with the transfer portal, it leads to teams looking more and more different than ever before, like we were talking about with Missouri. Certainly was not expecting them to be a top 25 team in terms of possessions per game, but here we are right now, as we do have Jim Root over there at the Three Band Weave joining me on the podcast, and very hard to know what we're going to be getting on Friday out of this team, because Creighton looked very good towards the beginning part of the season. They were in the Maui Invitational. They were able to make the final. They had a nice hard-fought battle with Arizona. And ever since that loss, things have went straight down the toilet bowl out here in lovely Las Vegas. They lost a pair, including being a double-figure favorite against BYU. And I have to think that Ryan Kalkbrenner is probably going to be out of the fold once again for Creighton. I've been checking in on his status, but sounds like he's dealing with an illness that is typically, shall we say, likened with kissing and things like that. So that's not too terrific for this Creighton team. And you could tell that without Kalkbrenner, this Creighton team has been a shell of themselves. Now they go up against Marquette as about a 4-point underdog. And as long as Kalkbrenner is on the fold, I think that laying four with Marquette is a good look.
Yep, he is just so, so important to them. It's wild because Fred King's actually been pretty good, the freshman, but he's just not Kalkbrenner. Even pretty good is a far cry from like second team All-American, which is pretty much where I have Kalkbrenner. He's like the best verticality big in the country. He does not pick up fouls. He plays straight up, but also gets blocked shots. He's a tremendous finisher on offense. He's really added to his game there as like a roll man, as a post finisher with a little half hook. He's huge, and with the way Marquette is playing, it'd be hard-pressed not to back them right now. Greg McDermott talked about how their schedule has sort of worn them down a little bit. You know, they went to Maui, then they came home, then they went to Vegas, play two games, then they came home. It might be getting to them a little bit, and when they're not full strength and they're going against a team in Marquette that's going to be really amped up to play the preseason Big East favorite, It's a tough spot for the Blue Jays, given the stretch that they're in right now.
But I do think that this is going to be a relatively brutal one, and I really like what I've seen out of Marquette as well. I know that you are not too far away from the Golden Eagles program out there in the great state of Illinois, and with Marquette, I've been pleasantly surprised because I felt like they should have done a little bit more in the transfer portal. I thought Jacques Smart was playing a dangerous game, relying upon a bunch of guys to take big strides forward from year number one to year number two. But that win that they had over Baylor, where they forced 16 turnovers, the game where they just completely out-physicaled Notre Dame and only turned the ball over three times themselves, has me very warm on this Marquette team. Now, we saw them sort of slide towards back half of the season last year after a hot start, but this team does feel a little bit different with Tyler Kolek, in my opinion, being one of the most underrated point guards in America.
Yeah, Kolek's great. Whenever I watch them, I'm just kind of mesmerized by his almost like Steve Nashian ability to always get under the rim. Like, he doesn't always shoot it, he doesn't always finish, but he can get kind of by guys without being lightning quick. He knows how to use his body and change of pace, and that leads to a lot of passing opportunities. That's why he's eighth in the country in assist rate, because he gets in those soft spots in the defense, forces them to help, turn their heads, and he finds the cutters or the dunkers or the shooters around the perimeter. He's been fantastic and kind of the linchpin for everything that they've done. Everybody on that team seems like they've developed really well. Cam Jones, Joplin, Omax Prosper, Iguodaro, all those guys are clearly better than they were last season, and that's a credit to them for their development, credit to the coaching staff. That team is legitimate, and maybe they do swoon a little in the dog days of Big East because they are still pretty young. But I buy them as a long-term, definite at-large squad and perhaps capable of winning a game or two in March.
The fact that you use the phrase Steve Nashian, I think that you deserve bonus credit for that, because that was an absolutely tremendous drop there by you. As we do have Jim Root of the Three Man Weave joining me on the podcast. And Jim, something that we've been talking about quite a bit on this interview today has been just looking at inconsistency. And now I bring to you this. Georgetown, the good old Hoyas, they're going to be playing us to Xavier. And I'm not sure how you've taken a look at this Georgetown team, who is currently between an 11 and 11.5-point underdog. But I think Georgetown is honestly one of the best live bet teams in all of college basketball, because whatever they do in the first half, just bet the complete opposite and you'll hit every single time. It feels like Georgetown actually plays one really good half of basketball because they've got actually nice players on their roster, and then they play one completely brain-dead half of basketball where you have no idea how it's a college basketball team at the Division I level. I'm not sure what you make out of this game. Personally, I do think that Georgetown catching 11 at home is something that I'm going to be looking into, just because I think that one good half of basketball from Georgetown might be just enough to be able to cover the number.
Yeah, well, can we call them like consistently inconsistent?
Yes.
We know that they're going to be erratic. We just don't know what the erratic trend is going to be.
We don't know if it's going to be the first half or the second half that they're going to let us down.
Exactly. It's just kind of a Patrick Ewing trend, too, is his teams typically, last year accepted in Big East play, but they typically play to competition fairly well. Like, when they're playing up against a better team, they can compete. I think of some of their efforts against Villanova in recent years, they've been hanging around with a powerhouse like them. But then when they're laying a bunch of points to a mid-major team, they can't really blow them out. They play to that competition level as well. That speaks to coaching to me. I don't think that he crafts like any sort of intricate game plan. It's more of like how hard is this semi-talented team going to play? And I think they'll be up for this one against Xavier. It is a Big East game. They haven't won one since, well, I guess it would be calendar year 2020 at this point. But it does feel like a little bit too many to me. I'm hoping maybe we get it to tick up to 12, like 12, given what I made the number. But even at 11, 11 and a half, that's certainly the side I would lean towards is the Hoyas.
Yep, and with Georgetown, they've been a part of a lot of these games. And I'm sure that you've been feeling it. I've been feeling it. And it feels like every single person that I've interacted with at Betts College Basketball has been feeling it as well. That would be wild and dramatic swings in college basketball games. We're doing this a few hours after the dreaded Elon game that we saw on Thursday, where I was thinking, oh, Elon's up 12 points with about 12 minutes remaining. We're feeling really good about this one. They end up not being able to cover the 5.5 that I had on them. And it feels like we've been seeing more and more of this in general. I've been trying to talk people off the ledge, being like, you know what? You're going to be on the right side of some. You're going to be on the wrong side of others. You don't know how it's necessarily going to go. But I mean, what advice do you give in terms of those of us, I mean, myself included, that have been on the wrong side of variance this year with regards to a lot of these meltdowns? And Is there any way to be able to combat it? Because it has really, in my opinion, been the biggest theme of this early season in terms of betting college basketball.
I guess I'd say stay the course. I mean, if it's somebody that's blindly tailing you and it's just going to give you crap in your comments, like that's, I guess you just got to, you know, not worry about those
people. And we both know that there's those people out there.
They certainly exist. Ugh. They certainly do. I mean, sometimes it drives me absolutely nuts. I've been watching scores all day and suddenly it flips and I see what I thought was a sure winner go from that to a loser. It drives me bananas. I guess it was this past weekend or maybe past week, Akron, I was laying minus 14 against Jackson State, up 28 at halftime, felt great. And then they won by 13. There's these ebbs and flows, and maybe things get more consistent in conference play because you don't have as much difference in motivation for teams in non-conference. I think sometimes you see that. Man, I don't have any magic bullet advice, unfortunately. It's just kind of something you have to grind through given the high, high volume of games that college basketball has.
I think that that's such a good point that you bring up. And would you say that perhaps live betting is a little bit more, shall we say, erratic, and you can find better plus prices in non-conference play rather than in conference play? Because when it comes to conference play, you're obviously going to see meltdowns. I still remember the Pac-12 tournament where I had Arizona State against Stanford, I believe it was. Arizona State went on the wrong side of like a 16-1 run in the final 4 minutes, and Arizona State's season is over. And that's still one of the worst beats I've ever taken. I couldn't believe what I had seen, but that said, I can remember just far fewer of those in conference play rather than non-conference play. So would maybe a little bit of advice be if you're trying to take a look at some price plus prices live betting, since I know that that's become more and more popular, maybe do more of it here in the last few weeks of non-conference rather than trying to get lucky in conference where you've got a lot more familiarity.
Yeah, definitely. I think you can kind of identify some teams too that are very prone to these swings. We talked about Georgetown already. Early in the year, especially, Charleston has been a huge one where I think they'll be a little lackadaisical and then suddenly hit the gas, go turbo on a team, or vice versa. They'll get up 20 and then suddenly you'll get down to 2 and you got to sweat your bet. East Carolina's another team I've noticed is kind of different from one half to the next. The more you follow it, the more you get familiar with it. I don't live bet a ton. I probably should more. I wish I did more. I do think there's a lot of good opportunities for it in the non-conference, especially when there's outlier shooting one way or another early in the game. You can kind of look into to step in on the other side.
You and me both, my friend. I just do take a look at it. And if you've been live betting some of these games where it's been a game where the spread is off sort of by like 20 and you're sort of taking like, oh, I was needing to lay 20 on Oklahoma State versus Prairie View before the game. Now we're down to 8. You've been able to get some nice no-sweat winners there. And, Jim, we don't have to sweat whether or not we're going to get great analysis whenever you join this podcast, because you do amazing work over there at the Three-Man Weave, Fields of 68, and Action Network. You do a little bit of everything. Let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, so you mentioned at the top, at Second Chance Points. That is my Twitter handle. Follow there. Our group one is at 3MW_CBB. That's where we route all of our content through all the writing we do at Action Network, all the shows we do for Field of 68, our own podcast. We'll do a couple more shows for Action Network after the turn of the year once football isn't super prevalent in everyone's mind on weekends and the calendar turns more towards basketball. That's probably the biggest stuff. I can't think of anything else, but of course, I appreciate the opportunity to plug it.
And Jim does absolutely amazing work taking a look at the great game of college basketball. He's doing a nice job holding it down in the great Northwest. Always appreciate Jim joining me. Big thanks to him for joining me on Coast to Coast Superstyle, part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Friday as we have some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss in the land of saints and sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. in the land of saints and sinners from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Jessica Soup with myself, Craig Oops Pierce, and now a part of the Beast and Family podcast. It is always a pleasure to get our good friend Jim Root aboard. He does absolutely amazing work over at the Three Men. We've taken a look at the great game of basketball, holding it down in the great Midwest as well. Man, that much like myself, is from the tremendous state of Wisconsin. So, always a pleasure. Big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at gunit_81. We're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games with three digits on the rotation first, and then the games with six digits. Those are games involving smaller conferences like the Southland, the SWAC, the Atlantic Sun, the NEC. Those are all going to be there. So let's get things started with 871, 872 on the betting board. It is Xavier, and the X-Men are on the road against Georgetown. Georgetown is an 11-point underdog. Your total on this game, it is 156.5. I did make Xavier just a 9-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points. You're looking for a live betting strategy here. Whatever Georgetown does in the first half, take the exact opposite, because Georgetown in every single game, they seem to play one really good half and one really bad half. You don't know whether that's going to be the first half or the second half, but that is this Georgetown team. And Georgetown has the ability to, I mean, perhaps even win this game outright. I'm not going to bet on that, though. I'm willing to take the 11 because you do have some like a Primo Spears in the backcourt. 17 points, 5 assists, not a great 3-point shooter, but you've got some like Jay Heath averaging double figures to be able to help out this bunch. You've now got Brandon Murray back at the fold, as well as he has been relatively solid for the team, was a little bit limited in that game against Syracuse, so you do want to be noting that. But by and large, this is a Georgetown team that they've got enough pieces to be able to hang in this game. Kudus Wahab, 7.5 rebounds per game down low. Cook is able to give you multiple blocks per game. Now, Xavier should be able to win that battle down low. You've got Zach Fremantle and Jack Nunge combining for 14.5 rebounds, about 28.5 points per game, and these two guys combined to shoot well over 40% from three-point range. Sule Boom and Kobe Jones, they're combining to shoot over 50% from three-point range with 2.7 steals, nearly 10 assists, 8 rebounds, and about 32 points per game between the two of them as well. Now, it's a little bit of a top-heavy team because after Adam Kunkel was able to give you 2.5 assists, 10.5 points per game, you don't have a single guy that gives you more than 3.7 points per game. They could use someone like a Kai Tandy to be able to step up, and I do think that is a little bit of the issue that you do have with the Xavier team, so I am a little bit skeptical on whether or not the reserves are going to be able to step in, do a solid job for Xavier and for Georgetown. Once again, talent is actually there with this team. Can they put it together, not play like a bunch of knuckleheads? Because with this Georgetown team, they've been a little bit better on defense. I'm not saying that they're lighting the world on fire, but they've allowed fewer than 75 points in now 4 out of their last 6 games. It is a Xavier team that they have been very high-powered on offense, but with the Xavier team as well, they're going to cool down a little bit from three-point range. They're shooting a combined north of 40.5% from three-point range. They're a good three-point shooting team. I think they're more around a 37-38% three-point shooting team. I did set my total at 153. Georgetown, a little bit more up-tempo, but they're not necessarily a gun-it-down-your-throat sort of fast team. So looking at the under, and Xavier could only make them a 9-point favorite, so we'll take the points. 873, 874 on the betting board. It is South Florida playing host to Dartmouth. Dartmouth between a 10.5 and an 11-point underdog. Your total on this game is 131.5. With Dartmouth, I set them as an underdog of 10 points. I'm going to be willing to take those points. South Florida playing a little bit more quickly this year, but still not a team that provides a lot of firepower on offense, and they still do hang their hat on defense, as it's a South Florida team that overall is now shooting from three-point range about 32.5% from distance, which is marked improvement from last year, considering they were dead last in all of college basketball in three-point shooting percentage. So you had nowhere to go but up, and they're going up against a Dartmouth team that, call it what it is, they're not necessarily doing a great job down low. Dame Etekulun has been able to give you about 7 rebounds per game. You do like to see that, but Dartmouth 282nd in the country in terms of rebound rate. Now, with Dartmouth, they started out the year actually playing at a very super high tempo. Now they've been really slowing down, which I do find to be intriguing because they're going up against a South Florida team that they always have a slower style under Brian Gregory. Ryan Cornish has been solid for the team, shooting 41.5% from 3, 12 points, 4 rebounds per game. I don't know how long-lasting that's going to be in Dartmouth. They've been about 190th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, so even though they've been throttling down, they haven't necessarily been uber effective on defense. You've got a Dartmouth team that overall turns the ball over as well, a little bit over 15 times per game. They do have back at the full Dusan Neskovic, who's able to give you good versatility at 6'7", 11.5 points, 3.5 boards, shooting 46% from 3-point range, but he's been dealing with ailments as well, limited to 16 minutes or fewer in 3 out of his last 6 games, so he's been cooling off just a little bit. You need to get a bit more, in my opinion, of Cade Haskins, who's been able to give you 7 points per game, but he has given you 2 points or fewer now 3 out of the last 4, so he's had his issues as well. But with South Florida, other than Tyler Harris, who's been solid, he's been able to supply 15 points, 2.5 assists, steal per game. You really don't get a lot out of this backcourt. They themselves turn the ball over a little bit over 12 times per game. Now, the good news is they've got Keyshawn Bryant back at the fold. Bryant, someone that while he was at South Carolina a few seasons ago, was averaging 14.5 points and 5.5 rebounds out in the SEC. But since his return last 2 games, 13 points, 3 rebounds in those contests. So he doesn't look to be 100%. Russell Chewa, the 7-footer down low, is able to give you 6.5 rebounds per game. But really, other than he and also the gentleman in Sam Hines, who came in from Denver, 8 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, you don't have really anyone else that's giving you more than 5 boards per contest. So that's a bit of a limiter for a South Florida team that only shoots 61.5% of the free throw line. That could be the difference between a cover or not. Dartmouth throttling down means that this is probably going to be a little bit of a slower game. Set my total at 126. I'm diving under. And with South Florida, going to make them a 10-point favorite. So we'll take north of 10 here with Dartmouth as well. 875, 876 on the betting board. Princeton is going to be playing us at Delaware. Delaware is between an 8 and 8.5-point underdog with your total 143. And with Delaware, I set them as a 6-point underdog. It's a Princeton bunch that they're not quite the same 3-point shooting team that they were a season ago. Now, You're able to get a lot out of Tucson Avoman, who does a very good job. He's a 6'8" point forward. He chips in there 13.5 points, 6.5 boards, 3.5 assists. Problem is, he shoots 25% from three-point range and has been getting a little bit turnover happy. 4+ turnovers in 3 out of the team's last 5 games, and he goes up against the Delaware bunch. It's called what it is. They're not generating a ton of turnovers, 6.5 per game, but they only turn the ball over themselves 11.3 times per game now. Between Jair Davis and Jameer Nelson Jr., you get about 6 of those turnovers, as these two have been able to combine for 36.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, 6 assists, a little bit over 3 steals per game. But the main objective for them is to be able to get the ball to guys like Ibi Asamoah and LJ Owens. Owens has been able to shoot 40% from 3, 11.5 points per game, and then Asamoah, a rough season thus far. 5.5 points per game after last season. He shot 39% from 3 and 2 seasons ago. 9 points per game on 45.5% 3-point shooting. So we've seen a fall off there, but Christian Ray going to be able to do a nice job down low. Only gives the team 7 points per game, but chips in there a little bit over 2.5 assists and over 10.5 rebounds per game. He's going to be the best player on the glass in this game. Now you do have Matt Alico, who's been able to do a really nice job of combining with Keyshawn Kellerman. These two guys combined for 21 points, 10.5 boards, and Alico shoots 40% from 3 for Prince of team that's a little bit improved at the free throw line, shooting 70% at the charity stripe. Last year, they were a bottom 30 team with that regard, shooting 35% from 3-point range. You're not going to generate a lot of turnovers, but they don't turn the ball over a lot themselves as well. Both of these teams do rank outside the top 200 in terms of possessions per game. We haven't seen Delaware getting a little bit hotter with their offense, 69 points or more in 4 out of their last 5 games. But with Princeton, they've actually been very impressive on defense. They have now allowed 70 points or fewer in each out of their last 7 contests. Actually, I believe it might be each out of their last 8 contests, with the 70 coming against a very good Iona team, in which they very nearly knocked off on a neutral court. I'm willing to set my total at 136. As a result, I think that you're going to get a more controlled game, in which points are going to be a little bit more at a premium. Princeton has been able to do a tad bit of a better job guarding the 3-point arc than in past seasons. Delaware leaving a little bit of something to be desired in terms of 3-point shooting defense, but with Christian Ray being the top rebounder in this game, I think that they hold in there, willing to take the 8 with Delaware, set them as a 6-point dog, and make my total 136, also looking under 877, 878 on the betting board. Samford is going to be playing on UW Green Bay. UW Green Bay between a 24 and 24.5 point underdog, and your total on this game, it is 129.5 to 130. And with Stanford, I made them a 23.5 point favorite. I cannot get there on the Stanford team. UW Green Bay stinks. Matter of fact, UW Green Bay might be a bottom 10 team in all of college basketball, but a 3-win Stanford team is laying 24.5 points. Once again, UW Green Bay, not good, but Cade Meyer has been able to step up a little bit for the team. 15+ points in 4 of the team's last 5 games, and as a matter of fact, last 2 games, a combined 49 points, 14 rebounds, and a pair of steals. You're starting to get a little bit of something out of him, and for Green Bay, it doesn't sound like much, but they've been able to get to at least 67 points in 3 of their last 5 games. They are one of the slower teams that you're finding all of college basketball, and it's just not been great for them in general, and just who is Stanford to be laying this big of a number? You've got the Joneses in Spencer Jones along with Michael Jones. They're combining for about 22.5 points, 7 boards per game, but neither of these guys shoot it well from 3, and as a matter of fact, the only guy on the roster that really shoots above 31% from 3 is Max Morrell, and he's averaging 4.3 points, 2.9 rebounds per game. It really leaves a lot to be desired for this team. Harrison Ingram has been a bust-a-rooney. 10 points, 5 boards, 3 assists. It's not bad, but you just expect much more out of a guy like this. He turns the ball over quite a bit as well, averaging 3 turnovers per game in each out of his last 4 games, so that has been not too terrific. Issa Silva, I thought he was going to be able to step up, and he's only been able to give the team right around 4 points per game thus far this year as well. Stanford as a whole shoots 28.2% from 3-point range with 14.5 turnovers per game. UW Green Bay, they're one of the saddest teams in all of college basketball, ranking in the bottom 75 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. They don't have a single player averaging more than 3.6 rebounds per game. UW Green Bay shoots 25% from 3-point range. They turn the ball over 14.2 times per game, but 24.5 on a Stanford team that stinks. I just can't do it. I set UW Green Bay as a 23.5 point underdog. Willing to take 24 or more. I set my total at 128.5. Neither of these teams are looking to gun it. Both of these teams are relatively slow. Both of these teams turn the ball over left and right and really do not have functioning offense. And for that matter, Samford, they have scored 70 points or fewer in pretty much all of their games except for the Cal Poly game, along the Pacific game that led off the season. So 7 out of their last 8 games, so a spot in which I'm going to be taking a look at this total under, and I'm going to be willing to take 24-plus here with UW-Green Bay. 879-880 on the betting board. Oral Roberts is going to be playing us to Missouri State. Missouri State is between a 7 and 7.5-point underdog, with your total between 145 and 146. I'm right in the middle on this total. I set mine at a 145.5, mostly seeing 146 out there. I personally am going to be gauging the market, but 146 or higher is my buy point on the under. Now, we saw Oral Roberts beat up a similarly slow team a few days ago in Liberty. They were able to have good success there, but I do think that this is a Missouri State team that is a little bit more strong in their approaches because they got better athletes than Liberty does. Let's call it what it is. Chance Moore comes in from Arkansas after being a former top 200 recruit. He's been solid, shooting 43.5% from 3, 14 points per game. He's able to rip down 5 boards per contest. Missouri State doesn't necessarily have a ton on the glass, but Donovan Clay, nice stat sheet stuff for 8 points, 6 boards, 3.5 assists. Not a good 3-point shooter, but gives you a steal and a half per contest as well. He's been able to pull down at least 6 rebounds in each out of their last 5 games, and he's been able to give the team 6 blocks in the last 4 games as well. And Oral Roberts going to have a tough time matching up with that. Now, Oral Roberts has 7'5" Connor Vanover that is able to shoot from 3, about 33%, and at 7'5", he's shooting 88% at the charity stripe. That's actually really good. 12.6 rebounds out of him, and Max Asemus, we all know what sort of a score he is. 20.6 boards, 3.5 assists per game, shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range. When it's all said and done, he's going to be a 40% 3-point shooter this season. And then you've got Isaac McBride and Carlos Jurgens. They've been able to combine for about 21.5 points, 7 assists. Both of these guys shoot over 40% from 3. Oral Roberts only turning the ball over 10.5 times per game, considering they're a little bit more of an up-tempo team. That is very impressive. The bugaboo that you do have with Oral Roberts is, well, on the defensive side of things, as currently they're ranked 218th nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis for Missouri State. They do rank in the bottom 50 in terms of possessions per game, and they've been able to do a relatively solid job on defense. They're in the top 100 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Many of these games have come on the road, so I do think that they're going to be able to provide a little bit of a speed bump to this Oral Roberts team. They've got good flexibility. They do have a lot of guys that just come in for better programs. You've got some like an Alston Mason, who is a bit of an afterthought at Oklahoma last season. He's been able to give the team 9.5 points per game, shoots 34% from 3-point range. I do think that the depth is going to keep Missouri State in this game, but I do think that in the end, it's going to be all about Max Asemus and having to go up against a gentleman in 7'5", Connor Vanover. That is going to take it out of Missouri State. So I did make Oral Roberts a 7.5-point favorite. 7 is the max I'm willing to lay, but I'm willing to lay 7 with Oral Roberts. And at 146 or higher, going to be taking a look at this total under. 881, 882 on the betting board. Southern Illinois is going to be playing us to Chicago State. Chicago State is between a 15 to a 15.5-point underdog. Totals between 133.5 and 135. And I did set my total at 131. You got a Southern Illinois team that ranks in the bottom 125 in possessions per game. And the only reason why they rank that highly is that they have played a few overtime games, like the game that we saw against Cal Baptist. And for the Chicago State bunch, in regulation, they've actually been a little bit better on defense, allowing in regulation fewer than 70 points at each of their last 3 contests. So I do think that they're starting to turn over a new leaf. I'm going to be taking a look at this total under with Chicago State. They get a tad bit sloppy with the ball, turning it over 15 times per contest. Meanwhile, Chicago State, they're not a super-duper fast team. They're not really a super slow team, but they do have guys with ability, like a Wesley Cardet. He's a former top 200 recruit that comes in from Sam I. Amford. He's been able to shoot 36% from 3-point range, 5 boards, a steal, 16 points per contest. So I've liked what I've seen there. You really don't have a ton on the glass other than Jayshon Corbett. 14.5 points, 8.5 rebounds out of him, but he's able to do a solid job as a 6'6", a little bit of a road grader guy. And then Elijah Weaver was a little bit banged up a tad bit earlier in the season. He looks to be back at full form, 9 points and 8 rebounds in the team's last game against Murray State. And a guy that's able to pop it at about 33% from 3-point range. Former top 100 recruit that committed to USC many years ago. They're going to have a tough time against Marcus Domas. So Domas, the kid from Waupun, Wisconsin, does it all for this Southern Illinois team. 17 points, 5.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, steal per game, shooting about 34.5% from 3-point range. And Southern Illinois, they do shoot 34.5% from 3, but this is not good. Southern Illinois, They are a more slow team that turns the ball over 15 times per game. Both of these teams, in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, two of the lesser ones at all of college basketball. And for Southern Illinois, other than Domask, you really don't have anyone else that gives you more than four rebounds per game. I was expecting more out of Xavier Johnson. He comes in from George Mason to be able to supply the team 7.5 points. Does shoot 46.5% from three, but 2.5 assists after he had 4.5 assists in the Atlantic 10 last season does generate a few steals, and the Southern Illinois team as a whole, they do generate about 8.5 steals per game, but they don't have a lot down low, only about 1.5 blocks per game. You're really relying upon St. Peter's transfer Clarence Rupert to be able to shore things up down low. 6.5 points, 3.7 rebounds per game. Lance Jones is able to give you 12.5 points per game, but he only shoots about 30% from three-point range as well. I do think that Chicago State is going to hold in this game. Both of these teams have a tough time holding on to the ball, so I do foresee quite a few dry possessions, especially with neither team really looking to kick it up tempo. So a spot in which I sub my total at 131, diving under, and at 15.5 or more, going to be taking the points with Chicago State. 883-884 on the betting board is the DK Nation pick, as we've got Marquette, and they are going to be playing us at Creighton. Creighton opened up a 3-point underdog. Now they are a full 4-point underdog with your total on this game 154. And the DK Nation pick is going to be on the under. We are unsure exactly of the status of Ryan Kalkbrenner. Personally, I don't think that he's going to play. And if he does play, it's going to be relatively limited. So even if he's back in the fold, it's not like I think that we're going to get a massive boost for Creighton just because with him being out of the fold due to an illness that is unknown, but I'm hearing rumors that it's involved with typically an illness that is involved with kissing. So there's that. We'll just leave it there. But that said, that is not too terrific for this Creighton team. And you may recall I was talking to Rocco Miller a few days ago, and Creighton is hoping to get him back, and I air quotes here, towards the end of December. So that could tell you a little bit right there. But I set my total at a 149, and the reason why I did is because Marquette has done a really good job of being able to generate turnovers, and with not having Ryan Kalkbrenner in the fold, that puts a lot of pressure on this backcourt. A backcourt that has honestly been really good this year. They're only turning the ball over, Creighton, is a little bit over 11 times per game. You've seen Ryan Nembhard really shape things up in terms of not turning the ball over. Fewer than two turnovers per contest after last season. He had over double that amount. But this is a Creighton team that they just look completely broken. I recognize that they have given up a combined 156 points in the two games without Ryan Kalkbrenner, and I do think that this is going to be a circumstance where they're probably going to be looking to slow it down. They honestly did get a good effort out of Frederick King in their last game against Arizona State. 16 points, 11 boards, and 5 blocks. So, I mean, this is actually a kid that has a little bit of ability, but Creighton has no depth whatsoever, which is a big reason why I do think that they're going to be able to slow things down. Fran Farabello is able to give you about 4.5 points per game, and he's really your leader in terms of bench scoring. Marquette does rank 16th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, so they're not necessarily the world's greatest rebounding team, and I do think that even with Kalkbrenner out of the fold, Baylor Shireman, who has been able to do some solid work for Creighton, 12.5 points, 9.5 boards, shooting 38% from three-point range, he's going to be able to do something nice down low. For Creighton, they've been able to shoot about 34.5% from three-point range, but you saw it in that game against Arizona State. They were playing with far fewer possessions in that game, and I do think that that's really the big key here, because Marquette is a team that is looking to run it and gun it a little bit more. Marquette ranks about 67th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but they've been playing with fewer than 70 possessions per game in their last three contests. This is a Creighton team that, without Kalkbrenner in the fold, they have been a little bit all over the place. They did play a little bit more up-tempo in one of their games against BYU, but they really slowed things down against Nebraska and Arizona State, so I do expect them to do so here overall for the season. Creighton about 120th in the country in terms of possessions per game, but having a relatively limited bench, that does hurt them. For Marquette, I do think that they should be a favorite of more around 5 points, because you have had a guy that we were talking about a little bit earlier in Tyler Kolek doing an amazing job for the team. 8.5 points, 7.8 assists, to 2.5 turnovers per game, and with Marquette only turning the ball over 11.9 times per game compared to how quickly they play, that is relatively impressive. You've got Javon Joplin, who's able to shoot 46% from 3, 10.5 points per game. Really, though, for this Marquette team, despite the fact that Kalkbrenner, I'm thinking he's going to be out of the fold, other than Oso Ogudero, who's been able to give you 11.7 rebounds per game, you don't have a single player that does give you more than 5 rebounds per game. That is a little bit of an issue now. You have Oliver Maximine Prosper, who's been able to do nice work, 15 points, 5 boards. He drills about 32% of his threes, but I do think that this is going to be a game that Creighton is going to be looking to slow down, and I do think that they're going to have a little bit of success with it, with the way that they've been able to take care of the ball and the way that they've really taken the air out of the ball, as this is a Creighton bunch that they have now scored 71 points for fewer in 3 of their last 4 games. I do think that this is going to be a tad bit more low and slow. And if you look at regulation, because Marquette did play that overtime game against Wisconsin, Marquette in regulation has allowed 70 points or fewer in now 6 out of their last 7 games. I do think that you're going to get a bit of a low scoring affair, and I do think that in the end, with Marquette having Cam Jones chipping in their 16.5 points, shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range, really being that guy towards the end of the game, Marquette is going to be able to cover this number. I'm willing to lay up to 4.5 with Marquette Southam as a 5-point favorite, and DK Nation pick, that is going to be on the under. I made my total 149, and this is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we get the extra games, 885, 886. Weber State is going to be on the road facing off against Cal Poly. Cal Poly is a favorite of 5.5 points with your total between 127 and 128.5. And with Weber State, I set them more around the 4.5 point underdog range. I needed at least a 5 to be able to take them, so I'm willing to take 5.5. With Cal Poly, I've honestly been quite impressed by what I've seen out of them. You've got Alamami Karama, who has been able to do a very solid job chipping in their 13 points per game at 6'8". He's been really one of your main guys down low for this team, as well as he and Trevon Taylor have been able to combine for about 11.5 rebounds per game. Taylor, he shoots 32% from 3-point range, 10.5 points per game, and it is a Cal Poly team that they play relatively controlled. They only force about 6 steals per game, and the 14.5 turnovers per contest, that is still a little bit of a woe. It always has been, especially when you consider that Cal Poly, among your 363 D1 teams, they rank in terms of possessions per game 320th, but Weber State has really had to throttle down as well. They're 295th in the country in terms of possessions per game, and they've really had a tough time holding on to the ball as well, because it's been all about Dylan Jones doing a bit of everything for the team. 14 points, 9 boards, 3.5 assists, 1.7 steals per game, shooting 27.5% from 3-point range, but he has had 3+ turnovers in each out of the last 5 games. This is a Weber State team that they are turning the ball over 14.5 times per game. They do shoot 83.5% of the free throw line. That's honestly a top 5 mark in all of college basketball. Junior Ballard has come in. He's been able to give the team 9 points per game. He actually began his career at Cal Poly, so a little bit of a revenge spot here, but he's been inconsistent, 5 points or fewer in 2 out of the last 3 games for this team. Steven Verplanken, who comes in from Southern Illinois, he's been able to offer up about 10.5 points per game, shooting 47% from 3-point range, but not a guy that rebounds, as Jones is the only man on this roster that gives you more than 3.4 rebounds per game, which I would find to be a little bit more befuddling if it wasn't for the fact that Cal Poly, other than Karama and Taylor, doesn't have a single guy that gives you more than 4.2 rebounds per game as well. They do have Brian Penn Johnson, who stands 7'1", but he has been relatively useless after being a top 25 junior college transfer. Chance Hunter, you're really taking a chance when you bet on him. He shoots 42% per 3, but only about 9.5 points per game. Hasn't necessarily shown a lot of aggression. So a circumstance where I do think that the best player on the floor being in favor of Weber State is going to be able to keep them live in this game. I do think that it's going to be a relatively ugly game. Both of these teams, they play super slow. Both of these teams have a very tough time taking care of the ball. For Weber State, against their last 4 D1 opponents, they have scored 65 points or fewer. Cal Poly has been able to do a little bit better, and credit where credit is due. They have allowed 58 points or fewer in 3 of their last 4 games, and being able to shut down a team like Portland State to 49 points, that does say something. So it's a circumstance where I set my total at 126.5. I'm diving under, and with Cal Poly, you can only set them as a 4.5 point favorite, so we'll take 5+ here with Weber State. Now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
The extra games start with 306-645, 306-646. It is St. Bonaventure and the Bonnies play us the Florida Gulf Coast. Dunk City is between a 3.5 and a 4-point underdog with your total between 132.5 and 133.5. Set my total at a 130.5. You do have a St. Bonaventure team that, as they always do, they're playing relatively slow and controlled, and Dunk City has been one of the slower teams in all of college basketball as well, 310th in the country for Florida Gulf Coast in terms of possessions per game. And with the Bonnies, I can only set them as a 2-point favorite. I recognize that there's going to be quite a bit of travel here for Florida Gulf Coast, but Pat Chambers, I do think, is going to have his team very prepared for this game. And you do take a look at the 3-point shooting that you've got with Florida Gulf Coast, and it is very good. They bring in a pair of guys in Chase Johnson, coupled with Isaiah Thompson, that at their respective schools last year shot 40+% from 3-point range. They're combining for about 24.5 points per game thus far this season, with Thompson shooting nearly 40% from 3. Johnson, he's more around the 30.5% range, but he's been able to chip in there 2 steals per game, and I do think that this team is going to be able to hold up on the glass. You've been able to get 7.5 boards, 12.5 points per game out of Zach Anderson, and when it comes to this Bonnies team, you have been able to get quite a bit down low out of Jan Farrell, who as a freshman has been able to contribute 7.5 rebounds per game. I do like his overall game and upside as he's able to shoot 36% from three-point range as a little bit of a combo player for St. Bonaventure. They always do a solid job in terms of getting the game on their terms, but 14 turnovers per game for a team that does play relatively slow. That's unlike a Dr. Schmidt coach team, as you have had Kyrell Luch along with Daryl Banks III contribute a combined about 31.5 points, 8 assists, with Luch chipping in their 2.3 steals per game. But both guys shoot at least 37.5% from three-point range, but not a ton of depth. Moses Flowers has not been what we were expecting him to be coming into the season. He has gone off for double figures in two of the last three games that he's played in, as he's been a little bit banged up. But with Florida Gulf Coast, you've got a lot of depth in terms of this team as well. You've got someone like a Caleb Cato, who's been with the program for quite a while, 7.5 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, shoots over 38% from three-point range. Demir Bishop shooting over 40% from the outside, 9 points per game. I do think that it's going to be very tough for the Bonnies to be able to match up, and the Bonnies not likely to have much of a rebounding advantage here. I think that this is going to be a slow and controlled game. Semi-total at a 130.5. I'm diving under, and with St. Bonaventure could only make them a 2-point favorite, so taking the points with Dunk City to go along with this total under 306-647, 306-648. Manhattan is going to be playing us to Central Connecticut State. Central Connecticut State is a 3.5-point underdog with your total between 135 and 136, and I did set my total at a 135.5. This is one in which I'm going to be waiting to see on this. I actually opened up at a 134.5, so if we get back down to the opener, I would be looking at this total over. If we see more 136 pluses, I'm going to be taking a look at this total under, but that said, with Manhattan, I set them closer to an 8-point favorite with Manhattan. I just think that they've got better athletes, especially down low. I think that Josh Roberts is going to be able to play bully ball in the post, 13.5 points, 9.5 boards, nearly 3 blocks per game for this Manhattan team. And what they're saying is that this would be a relative pick'em game on a neutral court, a one-win Central Connecticut State team that I recognize that they had some close calls against the likes of Holy Cross, Brown, UMBC, but this is a Central Connecticut State bunch that they shoot 31% from three. They play slowly but turn the ball over 13 times per game. They have Andre Snoddy as their only guy that's able to give you at least 4 rebounds per game, 9.6 boards out of him. It is a bunch that has been able to generate about 7.5 steals per game, and you've been able to get some good production recently out of Joe Ostrowski. He's been able to give the team right around 4 points, pair of assists. He chips in there a steal and a half per game, so it's been a nice little Swiss Army knife guy. And Kellen Amos and Nigel Scantleberry lead the way with a combined about 24 points, 7 boards. Gets Scantleberry going for 2.5 assists and a steal and a half per game, but they both shoot below 30% from 3-point range. Manhattan not having a lot of their guys like Jose Perez in the fold has been hurtful for them since what we saw in the offseason, but Samir Stewart has come back and has been terrific for Manhattan, shooting 39% from 3, 16 points, 4 assists per game. Matt Nelson still gives you 4 assists, 13.5 points per game. The Manhattan, 15 turnovers per game. That is a little bit hurtful, but 8.5 steals is what they're able to generate, and they should be able to control the glass. I do think the Manhattan just has better players in general in this game. They've got depth, having someone like Marcus Watson be able to give you 10 points per game. I think that that's going to be enough for Manhattan to get the job done and cover this game. So Manhattan has an 8-point favorite, willing to lay it. Now that we're seeing 136s come onto the board, as long as this total stays north of 136, looking at the under, if we go back to the opener more around 135-ish, that'd be a take on the over. 306-649, 306-650. You've got Incarnate Warrior playing us to Bethune-Cookman. Bethune-Cookman is between a pickup to a 1-point underdog, and your total on this game between 134 and 135.5. I set Bethune-Cookman as a 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take them on the money line. Bethune-Cookman, I just think that they out-athlete Incarnate Warrior. With their Incarnate Word, you've got John Cisse, who's been able to do a nice job, shooting 46.5% from three with 11.5 points per game, but he's also got a combined 14 turnovers and 13 points in the last two games. I recognize that that was against Grambling and Kansas State, but boy, that is not a good ratio. When you have more turnovers than points, not great, and you do have Zion Harmon along with Marcus Garrett on the flip side. Garrett has been able to haul in their 5 rebounds per game between Harmon and Garrett. A combined about 25 points, 6 assists, 2 steals per game, and both shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range. Joe French seems to be getting a little bit online as well. After last year, he was just a sizzler, shooting 44% from 3 with 16 points per game. Thus far this year, just 8.5 points on 35.5% 3-point shooting, but you still do have right around 5.5 boards and 8.5 points per game out of Dylan Robertson down low. I'm still waiting upon Derek Carter Hollinger to be able to bust out. Last year while he was at Montana, he shot 44% from three with 6.5 points per game as a 6'6" combo player. Just 3.5 points per game thus far this season, but has been playing a little bit more frequently. Now he's been seeing an uptick in his minutes, so that should be able to help them out. And Demonte McIntyre still able to give you more than two steals per game for this Bethune-Cookman team. And for Incarnate Word, 14 turnovers per game for a team that plays relatively slowly. It's not too terrific. It's a Bethune-Cookman team that they're in a little bit of transition. They played slowly last year, and this year they're still right around 153rd in terms of total possessions per game. Incarnate Word, they're more around 220th. But for Incarnate Word, you really don't have anything down low. Brandon Swaby and his 4.1 rebounds per game, that's right now leading the way. Nicky Krause has been back in the fold for this team now. He's averaging 5 boards per game, but in his first game back, he did have 6 assists, but 4 turnovers and 0 points as well. This Incarnate Word team just completely disjointed all over the place. You really don't have consistent scoring, and you've got a lot of guys dealing with injury, including someone like a Charlie Yoder, who he was giving the team 11.5 points per game. So I take a look at this spot, and I'm willing to take Bethune-Cookman on the money line. Did set my total at a 137.5. You've got a pair of mid-tempo teams, but a pair of defenses that have been relatively grody, and I could see this coming down to some late-game fouling as well. So looking at the over, animal and take Bethune-Cookman on the money line. 306-651, 306-652. Youngstown State going to be playing OSU Southern. Southern is an underdog of 9.5 points, and your total on this game is anywhere between 153 and 153.5. This opened up at 8. Yeah, good value when you were laying 8 with Youngstown State. If this gets to 10, my take is going to be on Southern. 9 or less, willing to lay Youngstown State because I personally set this as a 9.5 point line. So very clear for me. 9 or less, take on Youngstown State, double figures. That is my buy point on Southern. Southern has been able to do a very solid job of pushing teams all season long. It was a bit of a grody cover, but they were able to get one in their last game against the X-Men of Xavier. They went on the road and they knocked off Cal. I recognize that that's not saying a ton, but they were able to hold in there against Arizona as well, because the Southern team, one of the best in all of college basketball, being able to generate turnovers. In terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, a top 20 team in the country, you've got Bryon Whitney along with Bryson Etienne. Both of these guys have been able to combine for about 24.5 points per game. Got a Southern team that it can be a little bit hit or miss from three-point range, but all in all, they're shooting about 35.5% from three, with Whitley being able to shoot about 39.5% from the outside. P.J. Byrd gives you 5 assists to right around 2.9 turnovers per game, chips in there a little bit over a steal per game, and each of your top 5 scores for the Southern team, they do generate at least 1 steal per game. They go up against a Youngstown State team that they're going to be able to have them outgun down low. Malik Green and Adrian Nelson are combining for 26.5 points, 17.5 boards. Both of these guys shooting 33% from three-point range, so good versatility there. And Dwayne Coyle, seal and a half, 4 assists, 17 points per game on 58.5% three-point shooting. I do think that that is going to be going downward a little bit, and if there is a way to be able to hurt the Southern defense, which has been relatively solid, it is from the outside because Southern, they do a good job of being able to generate swipes, but in terms of their perimeter defense, leaves a little bit of something to be desired, so that should help out someone like a Brandon Rush, who shoots 37.5% from 3, 12 points per game. But I do take a look at the circumstance, and I do think that Southern's going to be able to hold in there. A little bit tough for them not having a single guy that gives you more than 4 rebounds per game, as Tyrell Williams is really that guy, 5.5 points, 4 boards per game. But I do think that it's going to be Southern being able to come up with some swipes. They've been able to do a solid job from the outside, and this is a Youngstown State defense that is leaving quite a bit to be desired in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Same rank outside the top 200 as well. So I did set Youngstown State as a 9.5-point favorite, 9 or less. I'm going to lay the number 10 or more. I'm going to be taking the points with Southern and set my total at a 151 because I do think that there's going to be a few dead possessions and turnovers involved as well. So going under and a 9 or less, willing to lay the number with Youngstown State, 10 or more, Southern. 306-653, 306-654. Murray State is going to be playing against Austin Peay. The Austin Peay Governators are between a 6 and 6.5 point underdog, and your total is between 132 and 132.5. And some Murray State has an 8.5 point favorite. Old school Ohio Valley Conference battle here between these two, as they squared off many times a few seasons ago. And what I do think is going to be important for Austin Peay, being able to win the battle on the glass, because they do have someone in Elijah Hutchins Everett who's been able to give the team 6 rebounds per game. He's been able to branch out. He's been able to shoot a few threes, so that's been very helpful for this team. But they do have to match up with the combo player that comes in for Queens NC in Jabari Smith, who has been tremendous. 6'8", 14.5 points, 5.5 boards, shooting 35% from three-point range. Just been a little bit cold the last two games, but by and large, has done a tremendous job this season. Then you've got Jacoby Wood doing a nice job dishing out the sugar. 4.5 assists, steal per game, 13.5 points per contest. Only shoots about 30% from three, but Rob Perry, the transfer from Stetson, he's been able to shoot 38% from the outside with 16 points per game. DJ Burns is able to give you 8.5 rebounds per game, so he's going to be able to match up well with Everett, who's been able to give this Austin Peay team 13.5 points, leading the way. It's been really a bummer for this Austin Peay bunch that they've been without John Robinson the last month. He was leading the way with 15.5 points per game coming in from San Jose State, but Sean Duru Gordon, who comes in from Missouri, has actually been very solid recently. 14-plus points in 4 of the last 5 games, 6-plus boards in every one of these contests. Only shoots about 30% from 3 as a 6'5", a little bit of an undersized forward, and I do think that Austin Peay going to do a nice job with their defense because it's an Austin Peay team that they play at one of the slowest styles in all of college basketball dating back to the beginning of the 2021-22 season. This has actually been the best team in all of college basketball to the under, and part of that is because they do rank 272nd in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and that's part of the reason why I can't take the points here with Austin Peay. Though I will say for the Governators, they have been a team that's been able to do a relatively solid job on the glass, but they still do rank outside the top 225 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis as well. Austin Peay, they don't create too many mental mistakes. 12.5 turnovers per game. Carlos Baez in the backcourt has been solid, 8 points, 3.5 assists to fewer than 2 turnovers per game, and Caleb Stone Carwell, he's able to shoot about 36.5% from 3. He and Cam Copeland both give you about 9.5 points per game, but I do think that Murray State, with their backcourt, along with having DJ Burns win the battle down low, it's going to be just enough in this circumstance. Murray State has been playing a little bit of a slower brand of basketball as well, so I've set my total at a 130.5, diving under, and with Murray State, willing to lay up to 8 with them, so willing to lay the points, and we wrap things up with 306-655, 306-656. Tulsa is going to be playing us to Mississippi Valley State. Mississippi Valley State, between a 19 and 19.5 point underdog. Total is 135.5 to 136.5. With Tulsa, I can only make them a 17.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points. Tulsa's covered, I believe, only one spread all season long. They have been really, really bad at 1-8 against the spread. Mississippi Valley State, I recognize this team has stunk straight up, but 7-4 against the spread. You have seen a little bit of a changing of the guard for this team as Gerald Ivory has come in, and he's been able to give this team just a little bit of fight as Terry Collins has been that main guy. 16 points, 5 boards, steal per game, shooting 38% from 3-point range for a Mississippi Valley State team that, in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, was 16.5 there towards the bottom of all of college basketball, but they're shooting 36.5% from 3-point range. You've got someone like an Eldrick Stadrick, who's been able to give you 7.5 points per game. Danny Washington, he does a nice job, 7.5 points per contest, shooting over 90% of the free throw line, 36.5% from 3-point range. They've been dealing with a little bit of an ailment to Michael Barber, but he should be good to go, and this one was back for that Wichita State game. He had 7 points, so he's back to firing all cylinders down low for the team. And Tulsa, it's not like they do a great job on the post. They do have one guy that comes in from Canada in Bryant Selbongiu, who's been able to give you 11.5 points, 8.5 rebounds per game, but past that, you're relying upon someone like Tim Dahlgren, who gives you 10 points, 5 rebounds, solid player, shoots 38.5% from 3, but not necessarily a ton in the post. Sam Griffin is going to be the best scorer in this game, even with what you've gotten out of Collins from Mississippi Valley State. 15.5 points, 4 boards, 3.5 assists, shoots in the high 30s from 3-point range. And then Brandon Benson, who comes in from Chicago State, he shot over 40% from 3 with 11 points per contest himself. But with Tulsa, this is a team that sometimes they get a little bit out of sorts. 13 turnovers per game. I do like what Eric Conkle has done with this program, and they're looking to play a little bit more up-tempo than they did under the old regime, as Tulsa right now in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game. Mississippi Valley State, after they played way too fast for their own good, they're right around 300th in terms of possessions per game, and I do think that Mississippi Valley State is going to win a little bit more of that tempo battle. I think it's going to be a little bit of an ugly game, but I do think that Mississippi Valley State holds within the number because I do think that they're going to be able to do an okay job on the glass. Set this number at 17.5. We'll take 18 or more with Mississippi Valley State. Set my total at 135, so also diving under, and that will wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. A big thanks to Jim Root of the Three Man Weave for joining me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at @unit_81. Keep in mind, letter CM, naming does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it's very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I'll be coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means I'll be coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having seven kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.